I am very happy to be able to talk with you today about evaluation and evaluation of a very unique model that I've become acquainted with. This model is from India, and I'm going to start my presentation actually by taking you back in time to 2001 and set the context for this model. So children in urban India in 2001 were receiving diagnoses of autism with some degree of regularity. They had extremely limited access to services, and this would include schools that have professionals trained in autism specifically or autism-specific schools. Importantly, they had no legal right to education the way that children in the U.S. are protected under IDEA. Children in many countries in the world are protected under similar laws. They had parents who did not feel that they could question teachers and professionals about the services that they were receiving, but like parents all over the world, were highly motivated to help their children. India then, as well as today, is a society where disability remains very socially stigmatizing. Where the mother really bears the full load of responsibility for the care of the child as well as extensive household obligations. In 2001, more so than today, but it's certainly still present today, mothers are blamed for the child's condition as opposed to child's care. And there are, importantly, still very few options for what will happen to the parent, to the child after the parent is no more. In 2001, there were no options. In 2013, there are extremely limited options. So what that means is there's an enormous amount of stress and anxiety around this issue of what will happen after us. So in this context, there was an Indian NGO that was operating and had been started in 1991. This organization is called Action for Autism. Between 1991 and about 2001, AFA had worked with many families who'd come through the doors, and over this time started to formulate a sense of what was needed to help these families, what was most needed. They initiated a program in 2001, I'm going to be referring to it as the PCTP, Parent-Child Training Program. It's a program that has continued to evolve since that time. So the current structure is that it's run three times a year, with between 12 and 16 parents in each group. These are families that come from throughout India and travel to the capital, New Delhi, and spend 12 weeks with their child. They attend the intervention for about 4.5 hours a day, 5 days a week. Now I'm going to move us to 2010, shifting around in time a bit, where we entered the picture. So the evaluation that I'm going to describe is something that's part of what we call the RAFN Collaborative. This is a collaborative partnership between UCLA, Center for Culture, Brain, Development and Mental Health, and Action for Autism. It's a three-year relationship. I'm very happy to have all four of my co-authors and collaborators here with me today. We have Tom Weissner, the PI, Rachel Brezas, who is finishing her postdoc with us, Mary Brewer, who is the director and founder of Action for Autism, and Dr. Nidhi Singhal, who is the director of research. So under the RAFN Collaborative, we have two projects. In addition to the evaluation, we have an adult study. So I'd like to turn now to what it means to conduct an evaluation of an already existing intervention, one that's operated by an NGO and also one that's in India. And I'm going to try to do this in a relatively coherent way, but I want to start with evaluation. So evaluation is not necessarily the same as research, though those of you who are trained in both would know that there are a lot of similarities in the methods and analysis where they converge. The RAFN evaluation is really a blended approach between research and evaluation. We're very much seeking to generate new knowledge about the components of this particular training program and make research recommendations. We are also publishing our findings, but our questions are very much stakeholder focused, and they really are derived from the program itself. And of course, we will be reporting to our stakeholders. So as I mentioned, the PCTP is a pre-existing, already existing intervention. When we came on the scene, they had trained more than 320 parents from many Indian states, as well as families coming from Nepal, Pakistan, China, Singapore, Kenya, and the UK. They knew that six similar programs had been started by former parents elsewhere in India and one in Nepal. AFA told us that they thought the program was effective, but they really didn't know. They said that we just have anonymous program satisfaction data, and that's all we can say. So they were very motivated to understand, does it work or doesn't it? In terms of designing our evaluation, we needed to be extremely careful to limit interference in the actual program. So what we wanted to know was the program that they had developed working the way they intended it to work? We also needed to be really careful about not interfering with their existing processes of how children come into the program, who gets to come in, how the enrollment works, the fees, and so forth. To give you just a flavor of what the program is like, it is a parent training as opposed to a parent-mediated intervention. And the distinction I'm making here is that the focus is explicitly on changing the parent, not on changing the child. There is also a very explicit focus on empowerment and acceptance. And we've heard a little bit about empowerment from Marita's talk already. There's a blend of elements of many different programs with a heavy overlay of the organization's philosophy. All of this takes place in a very formal daily program structure that is the same every day. Between 9 and 11:30, there are shared activities between parents and children, and then between 11:30 and 1, there is lecture, discussion with parents while the children are in a separate area. We went into this saying that we need to understand what the program is intending to do if we're going to evaluate it well. So we needed to develop a model of the underlying program theory of change. We asked, what are you trying to do here? What are your intended outcomes, short-term, long-term? So the immediate outcomes that the program focuses on, as I mentioned, the key are empowerment and acceptance. But in addition to that, the program tries to increase parents' understanding of autism, increase their ability to teach children, and decrease stress. There are also vague ideas about improving child functioning, and I'll get to that in just a minute. Long term, the program really hopes to create new programs and services by the parents that they train and also improve family functioning among the families who attend the program. I mentioned that there's a structured environment. So the program components consist of lectures done by a facilitator, demonstrations that she does for the parents on a daily basis, group activities that she leads herself and also teaches the parents to lead, who then have responsibility for leading them on an ongoing basis for all the families. There are one-on-one sessions that are led by parents, but with feedback from the facilitator. I should say one-on-one sessions between the parent and the child. And then every day there's a discussion and feedback session, homework assignments, and then days where the husbands and the other family members are invited. And so the theory here is that this structured environment with very intensive input is going to lead to increased outcomes, including empowerment, acceptance, and so forth. Child functioning will also be impacted, but more so the long-term outcomes will be that parents leave the program empowered and able to potentially create new services, also have improved family functioning, which will then, of course, feed back into improved child functioning. Here's some images to just give you a sense of what it looks like. Here's the facilitator, Indrani, who is demonstrating a task that the parent is then going to lead all the other children, not just her own, but all the other children through. It has multiple steps, and she's explaining how the next parent should explain it to the children. This parent is leading assembly time, which is one of the activities that happens first thing in the morning, and she's using two different visual schedules to do this. This mother is leading music time. So in the upper slide, she's greeting and praising the kids, telling them that they've done a good job for coming in quietly and sitting still. And then she's introducing the song that they're about to sing using a visual. Here's some one-on-one activities. The mom is the task here is that she's been given herself the assignment to teach him to follow my directions, and it's a simple thing of putting spoons into these slots, and then they're tickling him at the bottom. This mom is teaching her daughter to request this apple juice that she's got, and then this second picture is right after she's guzzled actually the whole cup down. Things you might notice if you actually were at the PCTP in person: it's very crowded and cramped. It's extremely loud and chaotic. Although you can't see it right here, there are other children less than 2 feet away from this mother and daughter. There's another pair of parents. You'll see a lot of homemade signs, tools, tasks, and so forth, a lot of masking tape and markers. The facility itself is subject to power outages, rooms that are consistently either too hot or too cold, depending on the season. And in sum, all of these conditions are very reflective of the environment that these families actually live in and will have to go back to their homes and continue to teach their children in. So there is an intentionality, not that I think the organization tries to have power outages in cold rooms, but there is an intentionality to not make things too cushy for the families so that it is difficult to then translate it into the homes. So our design has three consecutive cohorts. I mentioned that there are about 15 to 16 participants per cohort. We have a pre-test, post-test design with a comparison group at the post-test. I won't be talking about that today unless we have time for questions. And we are doing 8-month and follow-up, 8-month visits and 15-month visits follow-up over the phone. The key components to our evaluation are that it's cross-cultural in the combination of measures from the West as well as those that were developed specifically for this context. It's very much mixed methods where we are combining quantitative measures with case studies, qualitative audio and video data. I won't be able to present the qualitative data today, however. But most importantly, it's collaborative, and every single decision that has been made about this evaluation has been made through consultation and discussion between the U.S. and Indian researchers. This is our timeline. We started the project in 2010 and currently have completed the pretest and post-test for all three cohorts and as well as the 8-month follow-up for the first cohort, are working on the 8-month follow-up for the second. But I think the most salient thing about this slide is actually the amount of time that we took that we felt was needed to adequately develop the evaluation, develop and test the measures, which included a complete pilot 3-month, 12-week cohort that went through a full dress rehearsal for everything that we were going to do. The next two slides just give an overview of the quantitative parent measures, and I think again here probably the salient columns are the third and fourth, where you see whether the measure was developed, adapted, and also when we are administering it. This is, again, parent measures, and then at the bottom you see child functioning. I think what would probably jump out to you is the preponderance of parent measures, and again, that reflects the model, that the model is aiming to change the parents rather than focusing on the child. Our sample includes 40 families across these three cohorts. They came from 14 states as well as Delhi. Their incomes are distributed, and these are, I've converted it to dollars, so it's a little bit easier to understand. Half the families are from nuclear situations where it's just the mother, child, and any siblings and father, and half are from extended or joint family situations where there is either one or many more family members, usually of the father's side of the family, and it's 90% Hindu sample. Moms in this sample, and I am going to be presenting the mother data here, are an average of 33 years. You can see they're fairly well educated, with 92% having a college degree or more, although only 12% employed outside the home. Kids in our sample ranged from just over 2 to more than 10 years. Now, the PCTP targets children who are 7 years and under, but intentionally allows and gives preference to 1 or 2 children per session who are older. And the reason they do this is because they feel it's very important for parents of young children to see how behaviors change over time, what it's like to work with an older child, and to hear the experiences of parents of older children as well. The sample is 72% male. This is a group of kids who are relatively lower functioning in terms of their language ability, with most of them having single words or less. This slide gives a little bit of an overview of what these kids were receiving when they came into the intervention, and I think it's probably one of the most important slides in my presentation, in that the level of intervention that most children in the families that AFA comes into contact with is very minimal. So as I mentioned, there are not a lot of services for children in India. Services may not be anywhere near the number of hours or intensity that children elsewhere would receive. And the children in this sample had an average of 11 hours a week that included school. So this is including school, only 11 hours a week. And 57% of the sample were attending no school, including even a play school, at all. So what this really highlights, I think, is perhaps the artificial confidence that can come from a treatment as usual control group when the intervention that most families and most children are receiving is so low. It's a fairly low bar to compare to a treatment as usual group, especially for a fairly intensive intervention. Now I'd like to share the results. So leading from my last slide, we do have a lot of significant findings looking from the pretest to the post-test across the parent measures. We were actually very fortunate in that these three cohorts were quite homogeneous in their distribution, and so we are able to analyze them as a sample of 40 and not have to worry about cohort effects. In the children, we see parent report of symptoms decreasing from pretest to post-test. We don't really see much change in report of adaptive behavior. The one exception of that is that the number of items that parents report maladaptive behaviors on the VABs that they see as being severe goes down. So the way that I look at these findings is that, you know, first we all wanted to get really excited about it, and then we sort of took a step back and said, this isn't really our goal here. We're not trying to evaluate whether the program works immediately after it's administered. It would be amazing to see no effects, actually. What we really want to know is that, are these gains sustained over time? So what happens in the real world? What happens down the road? Is there any evidence of change in these families or in the way that they're functioning? Is there any evidence that there's any dissemination of information and initiation of new services? Because this was, in fact, one of the goals of the program, to create this kind of ripple effect. So I'm going to give you the sneak preview. I mentioned that we have completed the 8-month follow-up for just cohort 1 at this point. These are the 4 empowerment measures. It looks like 3 lines because 2 of them are exactly on top of each other, and these are Z-scores, of course. What you see, that significant increase from pretest to post-test, is maintained at 8 months. The change between post-test and 8 months is not significant. This is one of the measures, the quantitative measure of acceptance shows a similar pattern. We see the significant decrease in stress. This was the one measure where everybody was sort of thinking that actually stress would increase because of the stress involved in trying to take this on yourself after you've been in a fairly supportive environment. Child adaptive functioning looks a little different. What we see is that the number of maladaptive behaviors that parents identify as being severe significantly decreases, but the number of items that they see as moderate significantly increases. We introduce a measure of family functioning starting at the 8-month follow-up, and we ask moms to report and rate their husbands and their families as compared to before they entered the PCTP. So what we see is that mothers feel that fathers are making more effort, showing greater comfort with the child, are better appreciating changes, are more frequently following the mom's lead, and engaging in fewer disagreements. We see that there's slightly less change in families, which I think is understandable given the complex nature of changing family systems, but they do feel that their family members engage in fewer disagreements with them and better appreciate changes in the child. This is the one aspect of the qualitative data collection that I'm going to share, which is a quote from a mom that I think it illustrates both the acceptance side of the model as well as the empowerment side. So she says, "I've become more evolved as a person. He has given me that a kind of chance to learn through him. Whenever people talk about unconditional acceptance, not having expectations and stuff like that, that's happening through him. So I think I've become more confident because of him." And then she goes on to say that she's now taking charge of the situation instead of sulking or blaming it on other people. And this is very much in line with the goals of improved acceptance and improved empowerment. So what we're learning from this, and this is an ongoing learning process because our evaluation still has another year to go through the 15-month follow-up. The program focus of empowerment and acceptance was explicitly driven by the priorities of the community. These are the areas that they viewed as being important for a parent training program. The program delivery incorporates the local constraints in terms of space and resources. And in contrast to a lot of parent training programs we see, replication and manualization, expanding the program to other places, is not the goal here. It's to help others initiate new programs, but not to replicate the PCTP just the way it is. In this respect, I see it as basically being more of an approach rather than a package, and it certainly has the flexibility to evolve and change, which it has, as I mentioned, over the years already. So I'd like to just spend a minute talking a bit about why empowerment matters. I think the context and challenges in India then and now are similar to many low-resource countries where there's limited infrastructure for any form of disability, simply just not enough schools and structured settings, very uneven government support, low awareness. This issue, again, of limited lifespan care options, which is a very, very salient factor for families. And then these complex family dynamics and multi-generational households. We've heard about that a little bit already from Laura. And then lastly, this varying levels of acceptance of disability, even within one's own family, as well as the broader community. So empowerment is, I think, the way that it's being viewed is a tool for maximizing a number of things. One is intervention potential, with the theory that unless the mom can change her beliefs about disability and her relationship with professionals, all those subsequent interventions that she may get through the course of the child's life are probably not going to be as effective because she doesn't have the skills to make them take. I think empowerment is a tool for local community change because parents can really be the best ambassadors for combating stigma. And it's a tool for broader change. Sonia Gandhi is one of the most influential politicians in India, and she's actually talking about autism here at an autism conference in 2011 when she says that parents have been the driving force for change. The stronger this movement grows, the greater will be the pressure on governments to provide more services. This is true all over the world. I wanted to end by mentioning that acceptance and empowerment is not unique to India. There have been many studies that have included an aspect of measuring empowerment and acceptance as an outcome, usually as a moderator or as a mediator, but looking at parent mental health problems, positive changes in problem behaviors, paternal stress, anxiety, and depression. And these are studies coming from Western countries. We are finishing up with our 8-month follow-up for cohorts 2 and 3 currently, and really going to be focusing in on the question of who gains most from the program. And we are also working on the qualitative analyses with blinded coding of the video observations that we have of the mother-child interactions, as well as other data from the group activities and audio recordings. I want to again acknowledge my collaborators and co-authors who are here, and acknowledge our funder, the Foundation for Psychocultural Research. And I especially want to call out the Action for Autism research team in New Delhi that Dr. Signal leads. And you can see them here looking very happy and smiley. Okay, I have time for one question. And then Aubin is going to have lead us through a brief discussion, and then we'll come back to more questions. If there's any questions, I can take one. For the coding?
Yeah,
we're blinding pre-test and post-test because we have videotape from both time points, and we're also blinding across the cohorts.
Okay.